Hello, Yes But Why listeners. This is your host, Amy Jordan. Welcome to Yes But Why, episode 251, my amazing discussion with Kelly Hopkins. But first, let's talk about our sponsors. Today's episode is sponsored by Audible. Get your free audiobook download and your 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Who was singing Itsy Bitsy Spider in the car with their toddler today? Yeah, that was me. And how did I do it? With Audible. Audible is available on your phone. Yes, that thing in your hand right now. Go now to audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy to download the app and sign up to get your free audiobook today. Our other sponsor is my company, PodcastCadet.com. My husband Chris and I run the company PodcastCadet.com. We provide advice and production help to any podcaster who needs it. We can give you a little push, or we can help you with the production of all of your podcast episodes. Contact us now at PodcastCadet.com and use code YBY20 to get 20% off the first service or workshop you buy. This week on Yes But Why, I chat with Kelly Hopkins, founder of Soul Exploration Through Art. Kelly Hopkins is a life coach as well as an experienced speaker. Through art therapy and community building, Soul Exploration Through Art helps people reconnect with their authentic selves. In our conversation, we talk about making art, life coaching, and how to spin it all into a successful business. Support Kelly Hopkins by connecting with her at soulexplorationthroughart.com. I now present to you Yes But Why, episode 251, Making Discoveries with Kelly Hopkins. Enjoy. I'm Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why Podcast. Yeah.
I was always really creative, and one of the things in my childhood, my parents' situation was a little off, and my mother and my stepfather and my brother and my sister and I moved to the East Coast from San Francisco when I was five, and I remember spending a lot of time alone. We were lower income in a higher income community. We're the only kids in the school that were on public assistance lunch. And so I had a lot of trouble making friends in this new environment. Also, my mother cursed like a truck driver. And so I cursed from the time that I was born, and I didn't know that everyone didn't. And we lived in about an 80% black housing project in San Francisco, and we moved to Montgomery County in Maryland, which at the time was very affluent. I don't know if that's still the case or not. And we were like fish out of water. And I remember having a really hard time making friends and spending a lot of time alone. And I started to make up stories in my head. Like I was a spy, and, you know, like all these different stories. When I was out, I would be out, you know, in the, we lived across the street from the school, and I would be in the school. There was a big field next to the school, and I would play and make up all these stories because I didn't have a lot of friends. And I would make up stories in my head and have imaginary situations going on. And I really enjoyed it. I always really enjoyed imaginative play. And my older brother, he was always just really fun. And we would go out, the three of us would go out in the forest near our house, like all day, and come up with these crazy games, you know, like we were Robin Hood type games and different things. And I remember that from that time, like, you know, grade school in particular, that imagination and having a very active imagination and imaginary life was kind of like a lifeblood for me. And at the same time, during that same time frame, my father sued for custody of only my sister. I had an older brother, an older sister, and I were all 2 years apart. And he sued for custody of my sister only. And my brother kind of left to and spent a lot of time with his friends. My mother was in San Francisco fighting the custody battle, and my stepfather was in law school. And so I was alone with our dog. And I remember the same thing, that imagination and playing, and the dog and I would have like tea parties, and that whole creativity really helped me survive that period of my life, which was very emotionally challenging and socially challenging. And from that time on, I really, really, really strongly wanted to be an actor. And so, and I don't think I really even ever told anybody that. And we moved back to the West Coast and ended up in Southern California. And when I was in junior high school, the first year of junior high school, I was in the fine arts track. So I was in acting and singing and drawing. And I can't remember what the other, maybe, I don't remember what the fourth one was. And
bless your heart, I remember nothing about junior high. You're like super detailed already. I'm like, believe me, you did vague art in junior high. I'm with you.
Yeah, no, but there were two tracks. There was like the fine arts track, and then there was like home ec, wood shop, you know, there was that track.
Yeah.
And so the first year I was in the fine arts track, and I was like, I felt great. I loved it. I felt like I was with my people. And then at the end of the year, they said, you know, well, you can't sing and you suck at art, so we're putting you in the gen pop. We're putting you in woodshop and home ec. And I was devastated. I was crushed. Wow. I was complete. And especially about the art, I didn't draw for like 20 years because of that.
Oh my God.
Yeah, nothing. Nothing at all. And it was completely devastating. And I kept doing, actually the first year of high school, I didn't even do drama, because I was like, well, I suck, so I shouldn't even do that. I did speech, but not drama. And then my sophomore year, I got into drama in high school, and I was in theater all through high school. And I was a theater major at UCLA for college, and did plays all through high school and college. And then I started a theater production company when I got out of college.
Wait, you're going too fast. Hold on, I have a question.
Oh, sorry.
No, yep. It's fine. I have a question about your this idea that these teachers like decided you weren't good enough and moved you, and that like really affected you. Terrible. And sadly, the thing that breaks my heart even more is that you are not the first person to have told me such a story. And so I'm like, are you kidding me right now? What are we doing to these children? Like, crushing dreams, you know?
No, it's a crime.
It's just not okay. I mean, organize it in such a way that everyone can take part, right? I mean, I can't tell you how many kids theater camps I've taught where I was like, yeah, none of these people are going to Broadway, but we're having a good time. Like, come on, you know?
Oh, well, man. And, you know, based on the work that I do now, it's 100% about the process. The outcome is literally not involved in any way. And so that taking the opportunity of creative expression and all that it brings to people's lives, you know, away from children, you know, especially like junior high school, that's the worst possible time in life, you know, to have somebody tell you that you suck at anything, you know. But they told me two creative things. I was like, oh my God.
Oh my God. So what, who was your guiding light that got you into theater? I mean, somebody had to have been kind and or inspiring enough to, because you said you started doing theater in high school and college and stuff. So like, who broke the spell?
Well, you know, it was actually the speech teacher that I had my freshman year of high school. He was very cool, and I told him about, you know, wanting to be in drama, and I told him about what happened in junior high school, and he was like, those people are idiots, you know. He's like, you should go out for drama, you know. And he's like, you know, just start small, and just, you know, go do the class and see if you like it, but don't allow those teachers to keep you from something that you've always wanted to do. And I was, he was great. He was a great speech teacher, and I did really well in speech. And he was like, you're going to be really good at this. So it was,
good for
it
him.
Was, yeah, totally. And in drama, it was great because I think my sophomore year, I had like the role of like woman. And then my senior year, I had the lead in the play in high school. And so I was able to see that, you know, that progression of if you, and I really didn't like school in general, but I loved theater, and I loved, you know, like, I mean, the great thing about theater is such a like hardworking culture, and that was, school never really gave me a work ethic, but theater gave me a crazy work ethic, you know, which I've used my whole life, because nobody works as hard as people in theater, you know, especially like in college, you're like building the sets and, you know, sewing the costumes and then getting on the stage and, it, you know, working crazy long hours.
It's funny.
Great.
I've done that in my adult life as well. So
yeah, me too.
You got to make it all. Yeah, you got to put it all together. That's what I always appreciated about when we were in high school, is that like we'd have rehearsal, we'd be doing the things, and then they'd be like, "All right, guys, we don't have rehearsal tomorrow, but you all still need to come in because these sets need to be painted." Yeah. So it was like, okay, cool. There wasn't like, there's these set painters and then there's the stars, which happens in a lot of schools that I've noticed.
Really?
But no, when I was in high school, we definitely had to do all of it. So yeah, the doing all of it, getting it all done, making it happen out of nothing. That's my favorite part about theater. I love that.
Whenever, as an employer, when I ran a big social services program in LA, and whenever somebody had theater major, anything theater on their resume, I was like already sure I was going to hire them before I even went in the interview, because all the skill sets involved with that, but especially the work ethic, to me is phenomenal. And every person that I know that was in theater has it, you know, because you have no choice. And especially in your formative years, when you put in those long hours, when you do every aspect of it, when it's like you make it happen no matter what. And if you're on stage and somebody goes up on their lines, or I was in a play and the lights didn't go down, it's just like, you just keep going. And it gives you that ability to be flexible and to go with whatever happens and make it work.
Totally. Oh man, I can't imagine expecting a scene to end and then the lights are still up.
Terrible.
You're like, so where we are, I'm going to keep drinking my coffee. I'm like, oh, okay. Thought we were going to end on that really intense line you just said, but no. Let's keep chatting about the whatever we're doing here, taking over this town, I guess. Oh my God.
But it's exciting. Yeah. Whenever those kind of things happen, it's totally exciting.
Yeah.
You're like, oh wow, there's people here. I'm going to do something.
They're looking at me. Oh man. I love you saying that. Yeah. Anytime you saw theater on a resume, you hired them. That's like my secret dream, to like have found out that like that actually happened. Cause I always think that. I'm always like, I don't understand. Like, in fact, I was talking to somebody about how, you know, COVID, there's no theater. So there's a lot of people I know whose full-time job was theater. And now they're like, do I get another job? And I was like, I don't know the answer to that question, to be totally honest with you. And they're like, do you know how to write a resume? And I was like, I only know how to write theater resumes. So let's investigate, yeah. You know? And he was like, how do I translate everything that I've done into something that normies understand? And I was like, you're going to have to be really detailed in the what you did part. But like, that's the crazy part. You're totally right. A person's job, they could be like, oh, I was the education director at this theater. But that meant coordinating events, talking to local schools, making sure interns did their job. Like, it's not like it's one thing. It's not like, oh, education.
No.
Yeah. Oh, she taught theater. No. The education director has a kabillion jobs, and they have a thousand different things. You know what I mean? So it's interesting. I'm so glad to hear you say that you have that respect, and that you brought it into your like corporate world job, because I've always been like, yeah, I don't know why more people don't just say like, oh, theater experience? Yeah, come in here. Because then that person will do whatever, because they're just used to like, who am I now? Oh, I'm a scientist? Great, I got it. I'm a scientist. So it's
exactly.
Like, yeah.
No, and the hours and the, yeah, I mean, that to me always just spelled, you know, that person would make it happen, whatever it was, you know, they would take care of it, and I wouldn't need to worry about whether or not they were doing their job.
Yeah. Whew, man, I love that. Hire people with theater on their resume. I like it.
Totally.
Oh man. So did I hear, as I was cutting you off and telling you to go back to your junior high story, that you went to college at UCLA?
Yes. Yes. Oh, I was a theater major at UCLA.
Wow. That's a very good theater program.
Yeah. It's a great theater program.
How was
it?
Did you love it? Yeah.
It was great. Yeah. And it was, it's a huge school, but the theater program was very small. Mm-hmm. And so it was nice to have, you know, within that very large environment, have a very small community of people. And it was, I loved it. It was great.
Yeah, awesome. That's my favorite part about like theater departments in colleges, is that they're always going to be like that. Like, it's like there's this huge other school all around me, and then I go to my little crowd of friends that I'm like, hey guys, what are we doing? Oh yeah, we're doing As You Like It again? Let's do it. Like, absolutely. The first thing I did when I went to college was walked in and was like, I got work study. Can I work at the theater? And they were like, oh yeah. And I was like, great, I'm going to head over there now. Bye. And like, that was it. I was just there 24/7. And they were like, great. Yeah. Oh, I love that stuff. It's so fun. So you mentioned I appreciate this speech teacher for empowering you. I'm so glad that you were able to find a way to, you know, work on your creativity. You mentioned right after UCLA, you started a theater company, and I cut you off. So tell me about that.
Yeah. So I started a theater company and with a friend, and we did a lot of different, this is a totally off topic, but when I was in high school at the same time that I was, you know, getting into theater, I actually worked with children that had been ritualistically sexually abused in preschool.
Wow.
And I know. And so that obviously screwed me up. And there was a molestation case in the community where I live in Southern California. And so that, and the prosecution of it did not go well. And so it was probably after college, one of the first plays that I did was a play that I wrote about that experience, because I had gotten really interested in ritual abuse and in everything sort of related to it. So I wrote this play called Triggers, which was about a woman who had been ritualistically abused and had buried it in her subconscious and was being triggered. The memories were being triggered intentionally by the people who had abused her. And it was interesting because it was a very cathartic experience, and it kind of closed that chapter for me. And I was able to kind of let everything related to that go as a result of writing and producing and acting in this play after I was out of college.
Yeah.
And that was the first thing. That was the first thing that popped in my head when you said that.
No, please. Great story. I love that. First of all, horrific. Whoever was like, yeah, let's get some high school kids to work with these kids was messed up. But like bless you for taking it and finding a way to like process it. You're like, my job now is to help them. And now, and then later, after I realize that it's, you know, seeped into my psyche, I'm going to solve that for myself, which is such a great way to get through things by not only writing them down. I'm a big proponent of writing things down, but performing it, there's something extra that really just gets it going, especially if you do it more than once. You know, like the more you rehearse it, the more it's like taking power away from something. It was so scary, but now it's not scary because I've said it 47 times. Right.
Yeah.
And like I when I was in my 20s, I lived in New York City, and I can't tell you the number of, you know, one person shows that were just about stuff like that, where it was like, you know, people working through major childhood trauma in the form of, you know, really intense dramatic pieces. But in fact, very similar to what you were talking about. So I was like, oh, man. Oh, goodness. California sounds like a terrible place.
It's so interesting that this came up because I have not really thought about the impact of that on the work that I do now. But now that I'm looking at it in the context of talking with you about it, even though it's not theater, it's very much the same idea of utilizing creative expression to first it was support myself and then support other people in processing the things that are going on with them that they're disconnected from. And so it's interesting because that was probably the most significant time that I did that in my life. And, you know, the first time that I did that.
So it's interesting that you're connecting these ideas right now, because I personally was in my mind thinking like, oh, well, this is clearly what led her down the path of what she's doing.
No, no, we haven't gotten there yet.
Fascinating. Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So, but
yeah, we haven't gotten
you know
to
what,
that
being
yet.
Said, I feel like that just means this has been inside of you forever. Like your calling to do what you're doing right now has been a skill set that's been inside of you forever, and that like it just waited until the time that you were ready to use it, right? But like the fact that you wrote this and now you're, you know, helping other people to write out their traumas and help them to sort of get past it in that way. Oh man, so interesting how these things come together, like patterns in our own lives that we can't even see. Oh man, I love it. Also deeply love the idea of this. Now, the show Triggered, was it a one-person show, or were there multiple characters in a whole cast?
No, there were multiple characters. It was the woman who had been abused, and then her husband and her therapist, because the husband thought she was going crazy, which was part of the reason, because I had done this research around this actually happening to people. And the reasons why people would trigger them intentionally was to make them appear insane, because they were there's this whole process, and it's interesting, I've talked about this in years and years, of sort of reclaiming, of reclamation of people that had been raised and abused in that type of situation. And so the characters, and they were all fictitious, they were just all came from stuff that I had read in combination with the work that I had done with these kids. And we didn't actually know what was going on with the kids when we sort of started a preschool over a weekend. I was the receptionist at a counseling center, and we started a preschool in an open room over the weekend because their preschool had been closed. And then like we put out paint thinking, oh, that, you know, the preschool kids, they want to paint. And the kids would see the red paint, and literally, like, and obviously it didn't happen more than once, their eyes would glass over and they would run in a circle and they'd start chanting. And there were all these triggers, and we didn't know what the hell they were. And so we were, you know, left and right triggering these little kids and figuring out what their triggers were. And when they would, you know, their eyes would glass over, they would, you know, get violent. And it was really, I mean, something you can't even comprehend. And so that piece of it, that piece of what what it was like for me to watch it, but then in the play embodying that element of literally your control being taken away from you in that way. So it was the woman and her husband and the therapist.
Man, whew. That trio of people too, to tell that story is an interesting group. Certainly to present a story of this nature, you know, the husband and the wife and the therapist to come all together. Yeah. Makes me think of the play that I did for my senior year in college thesis, a play called Death and the Maiden, which is a play about Chile. It's set in Chile, and there was like an overthrow of the government, and people were being like questioned, like interrogated. Oh, do you like the president? If you do, then we don't. Then you're out. That kind of thing. And this woman had been tortured, and it was in the future. And one day, regular day, she's at home with her husband. A guy knocks on the door and says, "Hey, my car broke down. Can I come in and use your phone and, you know, get a tow truck?" And as soon as he comes in the house, she's like, "I recognize your voice. You're the guy that tortured me," and ties him up and like holds him captive for the play. Like, but she has been triggered by his voice, right? So when you're telling me this thing, I'm like, oh my God, I totally did the same thing. And to be honest, the girl who played the character in my play doesn't do theater anymore. I think because it was too intense a play to be a part of, right? It did not help her. And instead she was like, this is horrifying. And then she didn't want to feel those feelings anymore, which I get. I get. The breadth of human emotion felt by an actor has got to be, you know, super, super intense for them to not only be themselves, but to be all these other people is a wild ride. So speaking of wild rides, take me further along yours. We can, if you'd like, I'm interested in how this play that you did now makes you connect the ideas with the work that you do and how you got inspired to do that. How did you get into the work that you're doing now with Soul Art Exploration?
So I am, by anyone's opinion, a terrible, terrible artist. So the people at junior high school were not wrong. No. And listen, but in an objective view, but from a process perspective, what I found, I was in my 30s and I had a boyfriend, and he was like, you know, you need to, he was a filmmaker, and he was like, you need to do, you know, fine arts. And I'm like, oh, I can't do that. I suck. And he was like, no, you're an artist, you know, and you, that's a form of creative expression. And it's really important that you do it. And he's like, I'm going to commission a piece from you. I'm going to pay you for it. So you have to do it. And he's like, I want you to draw your feelings. And he knew, you know, like, that's my jam, draw my feelings. Okay. I was like, all right, I'll do it. And so I got a piece of foam core and I got big fat markers, and he's like, draw your feelings. And we had just taken a trip on Highway 1 in California, and there are these amazing bridges. And whenever I drive, and I was in the passenger seat, whenever I drive on the bridges in on Highway 1, there's this, like, you know, like almost another world feeling, because you have the ocean on the side, but you're high up, and it's just this phenomenal feeling of exhilaration. So that's why I decided I was going to draw the exhilaration of the bridges in California. And so I drew my interpretation of bridges, and then I poked holes in the back of the foam core, and I stuck Christmas lights through the front, and I plugged my picture in, and it was awesome. And I was like, I love this. This is like, I feel the exhilaration making the picture and looking at the picture. So that was a really big piece of that connection. And then I did community building work. I worked in a counseling program for like 11 years, and then I worked in a community building program that I created in LA It was a countywide community building program where we worked with small groups of residents all around the county, coming together and building relationships with people and then with their neighbors, and then deciding what their core values were. And then we would give them small group grants to be able to like actualize their values through action in their community. And what I noticed was that whenever, particularly in the relationship building phase, because these were all strangers coming together and we were trying to form a group. And whenever we did anything related to art, everyone shared more, everyone connected more, everyone had more empathy for each other. And the group process, the group building process, the relationship building process was that much deeper and that much faster. And so that was the sort of second piece that fell into place. And then I had been working 26 years in social services, and I adopted two children, and I was a single person. And so I was like, well, I work, you know, 1,000 hours a week. I can't have two little kids and work 1,000 hours a week. I'd been saving and saving and saving. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna quit my job. I'm gonna move somewhere that I can afford to live with them, and I'm gonna take a work break for like 5 years and not work. And so I moved my 1 and 3 year old kids to Costa Rica, to the jungles of southern Costa Rica by myself. And when I got there, what I realized was I had been using work to avoid all kinds of things. And they all, you know, in the day we would play and we would go around, you know, the jungle and hang out. And then at night, all this stuff would come for me, you know, everything that I hadn't been dealing with. And it was really overwhelming. And the development that we had moved to was screwed up and wasn't going to get finished. And there were supposed to be a lot of people there, and there's supposed to be kids there. And it was like a handful of people and almost no kids. And so I felt very alone and very overwhelmed. And I was like, okay, I, you know, obviously I'm here for a reason. I'm in this position for a reason. And I want my life to be, I want to be who I'm supposed to be. I want to really finally, because I've been hiding, you know, when I tried acting, the reason that I wasn't successful was because I was hiding and I was not willing to be fully seen. And so you have to be fully seen to do that, especially in the audition process. And so I was like, you know, this is really my last chance to deal with myself and really own who I am, really connect with my authentic self and not hide anymore. So I moved from that development to another one that had families and people. And I was like, I'm going to use art. I remembered that I had been using art to express my feelings since that time with my boyfriend. And I remembered what art did with the people I had been working with. And I was like, I'm going to take art and everything I know about how to, you know, work with people, and I'm going to do it to myself. And I'm going to figure out what the hell's wrong with me. And I'm going to help me myself, you know, find myself, connect with myself and be myself for real. Cause I don't want to die never having fully been myself. And so I started an art group with my neighbors, and I started to put together these exercises utilizing journaling, meditation and visualization and drawing to process a lot of different things. And it worked. And I was able to reconnect with my authentic self and heal myself, and it worked for my neighbors, and it changed everything.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds great that you were able to like reverse engineer the skills that you had to assist yourself. I mean, I feel like that's like everyone's life goal, is to try to figure out like, wait, what do I bring to the table? And then how can that benefit myself and others? Right. But yeah, like the idea that you put all these things together is great. Now, one thing I will say is that I wish that you had like a mom's group to talk to at this point, because I was like, well, of course you felt lost and alone. You had a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old. That's how you feel.
Alone in the jungle. Yeah. Yes.
I mean, well, but you can have a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old in the middle of, a bumping city, and you still feel alone. You know, it's a weird experience to have small children until they can really connect with you back. There's a lot of like, so it's me. And this thing, like, so that can make it really, really hard. Puts us all in an existential crisis. But you really found a way to, like, work that existential crisis into helpfulness, right? How did the neighborhood, were you, like, totally bonding with your new neighbors? They were like, oh, thank God we have this cool new neighbor that showed up to have fun.
Well, I think, you know, in thinking about the play and in thinking about triggers, which I have not thought about in a really long time, I think that was somewhere in there, that idea that creativity had really helped me, because that whole experience had put me in a very dark place, and triggers was the thing that helped me to move out of it. And that must have been in there somewhere. That must have been in there somewhere, that creativity is a source of healing. That must have been in my subconscious. And the great thing about the community is that I was not the most kind of out there thing going on. Like, it's a very spiritual community, and there were a lot of, and I think that's one of the reasons why I felt comfortable to get into this with my neighbors, was because there were a lot of different kinds of offerings. There was a women's circle, there was a men's circle, there was a lot of different activities going on that were about healing and personal growth. And so my art group really, you know, just kind of fit in as one of the things that people were doing in the community to support each other's growth. But yes, people absolutely, and I actually still meet with that group via Zoom every week, because that, to me, that, like, that's my group, you know, like, that's my group. Like, I run groups for other people, and I have individual sessions with other people, but that's my group, you know, that's where I do my art. And so we still meet every week. And that process really became about, you know, actualizing my true self. And then because I took a work break, when I went to go back to work, I was thinking about getting another social services job. And I was like, but that's not what I want to do, you know? And I fully intended to do this. And I was thinking, like, oh, I'll start a nonprofit on the side, you know, kind of like a, you know, a passion project. And then I was like, but this is what I want to do, you know? And this has been helped me so much. It's helped my neighbors so much. I believe that this can help other people as well to process through. And what I have found is that many women throughout the course of their lives get disconnected from their inner wisdom, from their authentic self. And there's just a lot of crap that has happened to them, you know, that has buried that piece of them. And then a lot of really negative messages, you know, going back to my junior high school experience, but from parents, from the media, from teachers and other authority figures, just really negative messages that have them shutting down parts of themselves. And when you shut down parts of who you are, you do get disconnected from that authentic self, because your authentic self needs to be all of who you are. It can't leave out big chunks. And so you end up with just this, like, thread, this tiny thread between you and who you really are. And so that's really been my joy in work, is to support particularly women, but I also do work with men and teenagers, but particularly with women, to help them to reconnect with that inner wisdom, to reconnect with their authentic self by processing things through these art exercises. I've got like about 75 different exercises that access different either emotions or aspects of life. And I'll also, when I'm working with someone individually, I'll make, and it's weird because I'm not I wasn't a spiritual person at all. And then I, you know, went through a kind of spiritual awakening at the same time that I was doing this process, but I still don't consider myself super spiritual, But like when I'm doing the visualization, I don't ever prepare anything, and I don't think at all. And it's like, it just comes and it just comes out. And so when I'm with an individual client, I'll frequently prepare, you know, like I'll turn on the, we work on Zoom, and I'll turn on the recording and I'll just record whatever comes out. And then I'll send it to them in a video so that they can do it. Cause sometimes it takes more than one time going through that experience and drawing and different drawings coming out in order to really fully let it go. And so I'll record it for them, just a completely unique experience, a unique visualization that's just for them, just about their particular situation. And they'll, you know, they'll draw it and then they'll do it multiple times to really kind of fully flush out whatever that thing that was hindering them was.
Yeah. Man, that's so great. I'm just, my mind is reeling with so many like thoughts and questions about the whole thing. I'm like, oh, this is so interesting. Okay, the question I'm going to go with is what I think the audience needs to hear, which is, how did you turn this into a business? This sounds great and like a beautiful life that we all want to live and like be in touch with ourselves. But like, you're not just like, hey guys, do this journaling. You're like, hey, I have a business and I've seen your website. It's well put together, right? So like, this is a business. How'd you do it? How'd you turn it into a business?
Well, I got a business coach, number one, because that really was not my area of expertise at all. And so to me, I really believe in getting the support that you need in order to actualize whatever your dreams are. And so for me, the art part and working with clients and all of that comes very naturally, because I have the 26 years of social services and then all the work that I was doing on my own with this and with my neighbors. But how to turn that into a business, and I had previously in my life thought about being a life coach. And so that's the umbrella that my work comes under, is life coaching. And I did a happiness coaching certification because I really wanted to have a coaching certification. I also am, you know, always been a very positive person and feel like no matter how dark the moment is, or even the stuff that you have to work through, the goal is like, I believe that in our authentic selves, we are positive and we are joyful and we are interested in, you know, being in touch with our sense of love and appreciation and gratitude and sharing. And so that's the, from a coaching perspective, that was what I wanted to focus on, was happiness and how to support people in that. And so I got the coaching certification, and then I looked into, well, how do people go about becoming a life coach beyond the certification piece, like the business part? And so I got a business coach, and I started, looking at a lot of different ways to connect with people. And part of it is, you know, using social media to get your message out there. I do a lot of videos because I think that people like to, you know, be able to see you when you're talking to them and, you know, hear from you and see you as a real person. And I started a Facebook group so I could do work with people that were interested in my work, and they would know where to find me and where to find, you know, how to stay connected with me. And, I just started outreaching for clients through those social media networks. And there's also, you can run ads on Facebook. And I started getting, I have clients all over the world because I have connections in Costa Rica and Brazil and all throughout the US. And then I started getting clients from Australia and, you know, Canada. So it just kind of grew that way from word of mouth, from social media. And with Facebook advertising, you can reach very far beyond your own networks. And that's how my business grew.
Wow. Awesome.
And there's a lot of tech, which I'm not good at, but I like, you have to have well, no, like there's a mail thing, you know, Active Campaign handles, you know, emails, and then there's a calendar one, and there's one for payments, and there's one for, you know, advertising. And so I got a lot of help from my business coach, and then, and now I have a virtual assistant. And so she helps me with all the tech stuff. But again, I would highly recommend, because many creative people are like me and that's not their strong suit, reach out for that help, because that those things should not prevent you from creating a business out of your abilities, because somebody else has those abilities and you can leverage them. You know, you don't have to be able to do everything. You can leverage other people's abilities and really focus on what do you have to contribute? What are your gifts and talents, and how can you translate them into something that somebody needs?
That is a great point. I feel like the number one thing that I've been talking to people about since COVID shut down theater was the idea of how theater businesses are run, and watching different theaters close and seeing like, I wonder if they'd handled it a different way. Would it have worked out differently? Like, oh, what kind of a business are they? How do they do it? And I think that something that I've noticed from a lot of improv theaters especially, but some, you know, theaters that do plays as well, is that, you know, the creative people are going in trying to do all the things. Like we were talking about the great work ethic. Yeah. They want to do all the things, but you are so right. You've got to find the people who have these skills and give them the job. I mean, it's as kind as somebody hiring you to be the spokesperson. They can't be the spokesperson, so they need you because you're real good at talking and people like listening to you, right? And that's a skill that you have. But this other guy, he's great at accounting. God, he wants to help somebody with some accounting. You know what I mean? Like, if only some cool person doing a cool project could call me and then I can work on that instead of all this boring stuff, right? Great. Wonderful, right? Give them a job. Divide it up in a way that's like, not, you know, I think that's something that certainly I and a lot of my theater friends have this chip on your shoulder, feeling like you should know how to do everything. Feeling like that skill thing that we talked about, where it's like, yeah, you learned that you have to, you know, do everything soup to nuts. You want to play? Put it up. You got to write it. You got to get the costumes. You got to get the place. You got to get the permit. Like all the things, right? You got to do it yourself. So this idea of asking for help, so hard to like break in to this sort of like fierce, I can do everything kind of vibe. This is excellent. This is excellent.
But I think, you know, theater people are also very collaborative. And so if you think about, if you reframe it that way, as this is my, you know, this is my team, this is my crew, you know, for this job, for this, you know, production, this is the team, you know, because that's really what it is, that you need the gifts and talents of other people, especially when you're an entrepreneur, you know, every day kind of bleeds into the other one, and there's no shortage of work. So you're going to have plenty of work, and you're going to need to stretch yourself. So you don't need to worry about that. But for the parts that you don't like and or don't know how to do, you know, because I remember one day I spent like 4 hours trying to build a sales page, and then I just cried. And so I called my coach and I was like, I tried and I cried. And she's like, oh my God, don't do that. And she ended up putting together this training where it was like step by step, and for me and some of her other clients. And then when I got my VA, I was able to give that to her, and she uses it also. But that idea that you should do everything, I think when you run a business, like to me, every time I have to do something like that, I'm taking that energy away from the creative work. I'm taking that energy away from helping someone, and I don't want to do that. And there's somebody else who can do what it took me 4 hours to end up not being able to do in a puddle of tears. Somebody else can do in 5 minutes, you know?
Yeah. Hey, slight change in topic, but of course related. Like you worked in social work, you did all this help for community building, and now you're trying to help people heal themselves with art. What what makes you want to help people? Like, what inspires you and motivates you to help other people? It seems like that's your effort all the time.
My older brother. So my older brother, when we were little, my mom was, as I think I mentioned earlier, she wasn't super available, and my stepfather was not a nice person. And we moved from San Francisco to Maryland, which I also mentioned. And so my older brother, he's 4 years older than me, actually, to the day, and he's always been my hero. But when we moved during that time when I was particularly struggling, he got three jobs. He got a job as a dog walker. He was 9 years old. Dog walker, paper boy, mowing lawns. And he would save all the money from these jobs. And then I have an older sister, 2 years older, named Michelle. And every 2 or 3 months, he would either take Michelle or I out separately for what he called a special day. And he would take us out, and he was 9 years old, and I would sit on his bike seat, and he would stand on the pedals of his bike, and he would take me out, and we would go out for the whole day. And sometimes we would go to Farrell's, that was an ice cream place when I was little, or we would go out to miniature golf or to the movies, and we would spend the whole day talking, and he specifically called it a special day.
That's so nice.
Yeah, well, he's the most generous person that I've ever met in my life to this day. And he always thinks about how he can support other people. And so he's always been my role model. And that sense of, like, you know, when you, like, we have a need and an obligation and a responsibility to care for each other. Like, I got that from Billy. And I always think about that. I always think about, you know, how can I contribute? How can I support other people, whether they're personal friends or clients or strangers? But I feel like that's really the best way to be of service and to be part of a community. And that's always the way that I've led my life because of my brother.
Man, that is so amazing. I'm so glad that you had that brother and that you have that brother. And he's there inspiring you. I hope he knows that he inspires you. You
he
know,
does.
Like, because you have such a, like, what an output. Like, with what he inspired you to do, you're now, like, spreading that kindness and love to so many people all across the world. Like, and that's immense and amazing. I hope you continue your global, connection with people, because these days being globally connected is a lot easier. You know, it is just, you know, not as crazy as it used to be. It seems so much easier. Like, I'm right now, in one of my little improv Facebook groups, they were like, it was about cooking. It's improvisers who like to cook. And they were like, do you guys want to meet somebody from across the world and give each other recipes to make? And I was like, yeah, I do. So now, like, me and this guy who lives in India are, like, swapping recipes to, like, make in our house. And it's like, how did I get connected with this random guy? And yet somehow this, like, global connection is bringing people together, showing them, you know, that they can be friends and, like, hang out and do cool things together and, you know, be healed and work on art and talk it through with a great life coach. Like, so fun, so fun. You mentioned something earlier too, and I wanted to say, I wanted to talk about the business thing because I think that's really important, especially for my audience to hear. But also when you were talking about how, you know, you try to talk to your people through, you know, your clients through, like, the experience that they went through and try to help them reconnect with their, like, the true person that they are, the authentic self. sometimes, to be honest with you, like when you said that, it immediately was like, oh my God, that's what I'm doing. Like when I do these interviews, when I talk to people on the phone and I talk to them about their whole life, about creativity, I love when we get moments like we've had in this conversation where you're like, oh, I had no idea that this play that I did connects directly to what I'm doing now as a job. And like, yeah, this idea has been in my psyche forever, right? Like the patterns that you develop, that you realize that you've been putting out there to the world, can only be revealed when you're like talking to somebody else about it, right? And that,
yeah,
like that's a magic you are doing with your people. But like when you mentioned it, I was like, oh my God, sometimes I feel like that happens with this conversation that I do. So like, yay, I love it. It's like goosebumps, so exciting.
Yes. Oh, I completely agree. I think that that's the, you know, conversation is such a therapeutic healing tool, and having this type of, I mean, the way that you run your show is so fluid and far reaching. You know, usually when people, I've done a lot of podcasts and it's pretty cookie cutter and it's kind of the same questions. And so the way that you do this really allows for people to discover things because it's very fluid and very, you know, you're kind of following the flow of their lives. And so that allows, in the same way that the work that I do allows for people to make discoveries because of the structure that you're using. It's really good.
Totally. Man, I love it. I love being on the same page with my guests. This is a great conversation. Oh, man. All right. So we have been talking for a good long time. You're fabulous. I've enjoyed chatting with you. But my final question that I want to ask you is, you know, if a person listening to this is like, this is how I want to help people, I have these skills. I mean, like, what would you tell them to empower them to, you know, create an art group like yours or use these kinds of exercises? You know, what advice do you have for these people?
Well, and I think it, you know, really anyone, any creative person could devise a method of supporting people with their creativity that, you know, could be very much turned into a business. And so what I would say, and this is kind of my experience, both when I was doing the community building work and when I created my coaching business, when we started our community building work, we were building a brand new model and we didn't know what the hell we were doing. And we just failed and failed and failed. And I didn't have such a far reaching thing when I started my art group, but I would recommend starting, like, don't just think about it because you can't create. And I'm sure your audience knows this because they're artists. You can't create by thinking about it. I would start, but start really small. You know, don't quit your day job and like try to start something, you know, a business from the start. I would start something small in your spare time and start, first of all, kind of looking at your own self and what have you used creativity to support yourself with? Maybe what have you used creativity to help your friends with? And how does that translate into something that many people might need? And how could you practice that, you know, either with yourself or with yourself and friends or, you know, neighbors or some small group of people to really work. Cause that's what I did. I really worked through what the hell is this with my neighbors. You know I want to heal. I know I have these skill sets, but I don't know what this looks like. And we were just, it was almost like play, you know, every Tuesday morning at 8:30, they'd come over and, you know, I'd get to play with them and with art. And so, you know, really kind of take some time to improvise, around with your skill set, with your ideas about how it could be useful and helpful to others. Also think about who you like to work with. You know, do you like to work with kids? Do you like to work with teenagers? Do you like to work with adults, men or women? You know, what kinds of problems that people have? Because usually a business is created to solve a problem that someone has. And so if you can figure out what kind of people do you like to work with? What kind of problems do they have that your creativity could help them solve? And then try to work out, you know, a structure and a system in a small way, and then try to build it from there. That would be my advice.
Totally. This is great. I feel like I just got a free life coaching session. And it's just great advice. Just the idea of opening yourself up to like actualizing what your own skills are. It is such a big deal that we all need to recognize. And one hopes that the shutdowns involved in this past year have given some people some time to realize what they want to do and how they want to do it. You know, I have a lot of friends who had just spent so much downtime that they had major realizations about like, oh, yeah, no, I can never do this one job that I had been doing ever again because it's just not the kind of lifestyle I want to lead anymore. And it's like, it's crazy how like big deal things can shake you out of your, this is what I got to do. This is what I got to do. This is the only way I can do it, you know? And then yep. Something crazy happens and you're like, oh, I had no idea that the world could be seen in a different way. Man, but to do this work for yourself, this creativity work, you know, like there's a lot of creativity work that's out there that people will suggest that you do, you know, the artist way and all that. And some of it's just like so heavy and you're like, ah, I could do that. But I like the idea of this, like expressing your feelings through art. Like that's fun. That's cool. That's my project tomorrow with my kiddo, I'll tell you what. But, yeah. Like, for sure. Because he doesn't do art very often, and I'm always like, yeah, let's do some drawing. And he's like, okay. So I'm like, okay, all right, what can we do? What do you like? You know, how can we work it out? But yeah, man, it has been such a great chat with you, Kelly. I have really enjoyed talking to you. And I'm so glad that you came on the podcast and just shared your career path with my audience, because I feel like it is a path that I have not yet discussed. And it is so just spot on with every person who listens to this and the whole vibe of, you know, creativity in this podcast. So thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you for having me on. I like you said, I had a realization that is important in this conversation. So thank you.
Oh, man. I am just like still soaking it up. You're so good. I really enjoyed my time with you for sure. This conversation has been, you know, really wonderful and a great, I feel like it's just exactly what people need right now too. Like, as far as like the unfortunate part about COVID shutting down theaters is that a lot of people are giving it up. A lot of people are like, you know what? Can't do it. Not a thing anymore. I'm like, no. Hang on. Stick with it. You never know. You can do theater even when they don't pay you. Other things, you know? Yeah. But this like conversation that we've had about really connecting with your own personal skills, what do you bring to the table, and then what do you want to do with that, and then building your team to accomplish it. I mean, chef's kiss for sure. It's just like exactly, it's like on point. I hope you make millions.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.